I've been ready since first call.
The V-Trigger.
Quiet, quiet. You'll ruin the surprise.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 333, recorded on November 25th, 2013.
And welcome to the 333rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 166th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback.
Oh, thank you for including that, because I forgot to write it down.
It hasn't been that long. I remember how to do my job. Thank you.
As you can see, Paul is back with us after developing months on the crunch for his Facebook game.
That's right. We've just launched Team USA's Pinsanity on Facebook and soon for iOS and Android.
So here I hear the words Paul is back, and I just have the images of Muppets running around flailing their arms in the air. Yay! Paul is back.
Actually, I'm more dark. I keep on thinking about the Beatles and thinking, oh, he's no longer dead, he's back.
I like the Muppet analogy better because, quite frankly, I've been called a Muppet before.
Anyways.
I've got my hands full.
Wow. But, you
That's
know,
exciting. I knew you were doing the design work. I didn't know you were doing the production as well. That's excellent.
It's a whole new world of experiences for me.
Okay, and Disney will sue in 5, 4, 3, 2. anyways, but it's not the same as a crunch which you were in the past few months.
Well, I mean, it still is. It's because we have to get our Apple submission together before the cutoff date for the holidays. Because it's live, but our high traffic time will be directly before the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia.
So,
it's been a fantastically eye-opening experience working with the United States Olympic Council and seeing how much pre-planning goes into these events. Like there are already bids being submitted for 2022.
Yeah, it's amazing how far in advance that they're talking about nominees for 2022 and 2024. It's amazing.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the gaming flashback. It's been a while since we did one of these too, but since a certain game was released on the 3DS, and I checked, I don't think this has been done on the gaming podcast back when Jennifer and Derek were doing it. But if it was, they probably skimmed over it. That's bad. We probably all forgot about it.
Well, we're doing a new perspective on it, so you're just going to have to suck it up and deal with it because it's our show.
Okay, go ahead, Jordan.
Gaming Flashback, The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past is a 2D action-adventure video game developed and published by Nintendo for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System video game console. It's the third installment in the Legend of Zelda series and was released in 1991 in Japan and 1992 in North America and Europe. Shigeru Miyamoto and his team were solely responsible for the game development. In 1988, a development of a new NES Zelda began, but 1 year later, the project was brought to Nintendo's next console, the Super Famicom in Japan. The Super Nintendo Entertainment System in other regions, due to the success of previous titles in the series, Nintendo was able to invest a large budget and ample development time and resources into the game's production. At the time, most SNES game cartridges had 4 megabits, 512 kilobytes of storage space. The game broke the trend by using 8 megabits, 1 megabyte, allowing the Nintendo development team to create a remarkably expansive world for Link to inhabit. Like Super Mario World, this game used a simple graphic compression method on the SNES by limiting the color depth of many tiles to 8 colors instead of the SNES's native 16 color tiles. The tiles were decompressed at runtime by adding a leading bit to each pixel's color index. Storage space was also saved by eliminating duplication. The light world and dark world are almost identical in layout, although using different texture tiles, and the dark world exists in the game's ROM only as an overlay of the light world. The script of the game was written by series newcomer Kensuke Tanabe, while Yoshiki Koizumi was responsible for the background story explained in the instruction manual. The English language localization included changes to the original Japanese game. The most common change was the removal of religious references to conform with Nintendo of America's content guidelines. The most obvious change was made to the subtitle of the game, which was renamed from Kamigami to Triforce, literally the Triforce of the Gods, to A Link to the Past. The sanctuary in which Zelda hides during the first act is quite obviously modeled on a Christian chapel with rows of pews, stained glass windows, raised chancel? I don't know what chancel is. Raised chancel and altar, but it contains no overt religious symbols, and the dialogue of characters within it was simplified to remove any religious implication. The font used to represent an unreadable language, Hylian, originally had designs of a vulture and Ankh. These designs were based on Egyptian hieroglyphs, which carry religious meanings, and they were altered in the English version. The localization also changed plot details, including the instruction man in the instruction manual. The priest Agarim became a wizard, and his background, which originally implied that he was sent by the gods, was altered to remove any celestial origin. The plot of A Link to the Past focuses on Link as he travels on a journey to save Hyrule, defeat Ganon, and rescue the seven descendants of the sages. A Link to the Past uses a three-quarter top-down perspective, similar to that of the original Legend of Zelda, dropping the side-scrolling elements of Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link. A Link to the Past introduced elements to the series that are still commonplace today, such as the concept of an alternate or parallel world, the Master Sword, and other new weapons and items. A Link to the Past also takes concepts from the Adventures of Link, such as the magic meter, which is used by items such as the lamp. Control of Link is more flexible than in previous games, as he can walk diagonally and can run with the aid of the Pegasus shoes. Link's sword attack was improved to swing sideways instead of merely stabbing forward. This gives his sword a broader range and makes combat easier. Link swings his sword as the result of a default attack in future Zelda games, although stabbing is also possible in the later 3D incarnations. Recurring items and techniques were introduced for the first time in A Link to the Past, such as the hookshot, the master sword, the spin attack technique, the ocarina, and the Pegasus boots. Heart containers that increase the player's maximum health or hit points in the earlier two games are present, but many are split into pieces of heart, four of which make up one heart container. More of them are well hidden, adding replay value to the game. All dungeons are multi-level, requiring Link to walk between floors and sometimes second is what was once called the Sacred Realm, but became the Dark World when Ganon acquired the Triforce. The Dark World is a corrupted version of Hyrule. The water is a dark, unpleasant green color. The grass is dead. Skulls replace rocks and pots, and trees have faces. People change forms in the Dark World based on their nature without an item to prevent it. In this case, the Moon Pearl. Link turns into a pink rabbit. Each location in the Light World corresponds to a similar location in the Dark World, usually with a similar physical structure, but an opposite nature. For example, a desert in the Light World corresponds to a swamp in the Dark World. A peaceful village in the Light World corresponds to a dilapidated town of thieves in the Dark World. Link can travel from the Dark World to the Light World at almost any outside location by using a magic mirror, and can travel back to the Dark World again from the same location using a temporary portal left behind on the map at the point where he reappears in the Light World. Otherwise, Link must use the hidden warp locations throughout the Light World to travel from the Light World to the Dark World. Travel between worlds allows for puzzles in A Link to the Past that exploit structural differences between the Light and Dark Worlds. As Link may travel to otherwise inaccessible areas in one world by warping from parallel but accessible locations in the other world. And Wii's Virtual Console. Both ports were very popular and contributed to the overall success of the game. A successor to the game, titled The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds, was released for the Nintendo 3DS.
Okay, Paul, go ahead.
oh wow, like where do I begin? Like this is definitely one of the greatest video games of all time. I mean, without doubt or exception, it was one of the only games, which Zelda games especially, which has ever really felt finished. Like you walked away having had that experience fully. Because it wasn't too easy, and it wasn't unfinished because of like later installments in the series, and it wasn't too hard. The pacing was absolutely right. Those are just high level points. I mean, don't even get me started on like dungeon design and hiding of objects. If you haven't played it, you are cheating yourself. Go play it.
Well, the other thing that's notable about the game is the score, which was also changed. Slightly. I mean, it didn't back away from the original Zelda score, but it introduced some new themes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Score, you mean like music?
Yeah. not score as in video games.
Sorry, I make video games. People are constantly talking about scores. I got confused.
Did you play The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds?
I did. I paid retail for it on launch day.
Okay.
That was last week. I'm so excited.
That was last week, right?
Have you had
that was
time
Friday.
That was Friday.
Have you had time to play it yet? Yes,
I've made it all the way through like two dungeons.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Yeah, it's actually really awesome. I did not think that it would have been possible to improve. Your world in a completely new way, and that is the fact that much like in Paper Mario, you can turn yourself into two-dimensional representation of yourself and glide along the outer surfaces of walls.
Okay. Well, you know, we've drifted into what have you been playing, so we'll go back to Jordan, who's also, I believe, playing a new game on his handheld.
Yes, I picked up Tearaway for the PlayStation Vita, and it's wonderful. The interaction between the real world and the papercraft world of Tearaway is fantastic.
I mean, Tearaway is about as basic a game as it's your basic action puzzler. You know, you've seen a million times, but they made it so beautiful and detailed and stuck to the theme really, really well.
Yeah, and they absolutely did a fantastic job. Media Molecule really brought things to another level after Little Big Planet and stuff like that. It's a shame there's hardly anybody else out there with a Vita to actually experience the game.
Oh, wait, it has multiplayer?
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, you can share things socially and so on and so forth. But what I mean is the Vita audience is still pretty small. And this game deserves to be deserves a bigger stage.
Well, you're saying that this should be a Halo style, you know, if you own a Vita, you have to own Tearaway sort of game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it should have been a launch title for the Vita.
Well, when did the Vita launched last year, so
two years ago.
That would not have been possible, but
yeah. Well, if they had done development earlier.
Well, call it the Gears of War then. So as for me, I got my Xbox One, my day one edition on Friday. And like I said, I did not deal with the midnight crowds. I, you know, had it shipped to my... And I think Rebel FM basically described it perfectly and said that while the PlayStation 4 is basically a very good PlayStation, it's like a PlayStation 3 version 2, the Xbox One feels like a different console. For one thing, a lot of what the Xbox One is doing has nothing to do with games that I'm enjoying. For example, I run my cable through it.
TV. Xbox is the new water cooler. TV. Sports.
Well, no. I mean, I just... Oh. So the problem is that my Kinect is looking at me, and I cannot say that word without worrying that, you know, if I say Xbox turn. It's going to turn on, right? And the thing is that, you know, I say Xbox Watch TV, it just, you know, okay, here's a TV. And then I say, okay, snap, and then I can do Skype and watch TV at the same time and all that. I got Dead Rising 3, and it reminded me of everything that was good with Dead Rising 3 and everything that made me want to chuck my controller at the screen. I swear, Capcom, when you do a boss battle, it has to maintain within the type of action that you've been doing with the rest of the game. You cannot go...
Oh, and you should have to fight the boss using the item that you found in that dungeon.
No, it's more like the game.
Sorry, Zelda thing.
It's like... No, it's... It's like... The way your character controls is not like a third-person shooter. He does not... You know, he cannot do it. You know, it's like... And from what I understand, I looked ahead, you know, to what people are saying, and the last boss fight will make you just scream and tear your hair out, which is something I don't want. I mean, I never finished Psychonauts because of that. But the thing is that it also does Smart Glass perfectly. Not only does it do all the usual stuff that, you know, you might see on a Wii U, in which you have all the stuff on there, you know, you can press and all that. But at certain points, the stoner version of Otis, he's not Otis, he's someone else, but he sounds like a stoner, will actually call you on your Smart Glass. And when you pick up, he'll tell you, oh, da, da, and then it'll add the missions to your game as you're playing. You know, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I've also been playing NBA 2K14, and, you know, it's changed a lot. Basically, they're trying to make it more like a role-playing game than anything else. And I've been playing a lot of the board games on my iPad, too. I've been playing a lot of Pandemic, a lot of Ra, a lot of Puerto Rico. And, you know, a lot of Ticket to Ride on my iPad. So, you know, I'm getting a balance there. I also started playing Mark of the Ninja as well. And Typing the Dead Overkill. They just released a new DLC. So I've been doing a lot of gaming, even though my time at work has been eating up all my time as well.
I finally reached a point where I felt I was finally done with Knack. Speaking of boss fights, the final boss in Knack is...
Developers ran out of ideas. That's all I can. Boss fights are so friggin' lazy. Lazy gameplay. Halo and Halo 3 didn't have any boss fights.
No, they're not. They're challenge points.
No. I mean, that's good for a non-narrative game. But, I mean, let me put it this way. Batman Arkham Asylum. What was the stupidest fight in the entire thing? That the Titan Joker fight. It was so stupid. Because, you know, it takes you out of the game, and you have to have the same game. The boss fights in Deus Ex Human Revolution were a low light. I'm going to tell you one thing. For the most part, boss fights are usually the worst parts of a game.
I don't know what games you're playing. A Link Between Worlds had an awesome boss fight.
Yeah, but you see,
I mean, I've only gotten like three of them into it, but...
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, I'm not saying... what's it called? That's the exception that proves the rule. You know? If you have a boss fight, you step back and wonder if you could do something else that's better. You know? I mean...
It's bitter because you can't beat it.
Boss fights are a throwback to a simpler time.
Yeah,
right?
Basically when you're playing 1942 and, oh, look, here's the huge blimp.
Yeah.
You know, the boss fight was in Phoenix, remember? And you had that alien in that little upside-down hat that you had to shoot through to get to him. That was the first boss fight. And
Knack had boss fights at the end of each chapter as well, which, you know, for the style of game that it is, I think is perfectly acceptable. If you're going to have, you know, a Mega Man style game, you might as well have boss fights to go with it.
Yeah, but you know, I find that almost all the best games have no boss fights. I mean, what was the major complaint of the first BioShock? It ended with a boss fight, a stupid boss fight. You know.
Well, and you know, the Halo games
didn't. That was my complaint with the first BioShock.
The Halo games didn't so much have boss fights as they had
grand finales. Is that what they had?
Yeah, exactly. They had escalation points. They had an event that ended each chapter.
But here's the thing, you know, that suits Dead Rising 3 perfectly because you have thousands of zombies on. You can have thousands of zombies on the screen. Why not have a situation? And there is one situation I hear in which you fall down into the subway. In the L.A. Los Perdidos, a.k.a. Los Angeles. And you lose almost all your weapons, and you have hundreds of zombies that you have to try and escape as other things are happening. So it's like, that is a good way to, you know, make someone feel like, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, that's the question of the week. Do you enjoy boss fights? Yes or no? And we'll deal with that at the end of the episode. We're going to move on to the gaming news, and go ahead, Paul, because I know this little bit of gaming news probably makes you happy as well.
Oh, yes, I was reading ahead, and I never do that. Gaming news, Take-Two files Bully Bullsworth Academy trademark in Europe, and this comes to us from Joystick. Take-Two recently filed another trademark related with Rockstar's Bully property in Europe. Titled Bully Bullsworth Academy, Canis Candom Edit.
Yeah, that's Latin for dog eat dog, just so you know.
Yeah. Bullshit Latin nonsense. The trademark was filed just a few days ago on November 20th. The publisher filed another bully-related trademark in July with the USPTO.
That's the patent office, just so you know.
Yeah, just for you kids out there. Rockstar first developed Bully for the PS2 in 2006, following it up with enhanced versions for Wii, PC, Xbox 360 in 2008. The latest trademark refers to the original game's New England boarding school setting, Bullsworth Academy, which offers a stronger suggestion that Take-Two is doing more than just protecting the Rockstar property.
No.
Oh my God!
Well,
I want another one! Sorry.
Well, what if it's just a next-gen version that's like upgraded with the graphics and, you know, made for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Wii U? Not that that's a bad thing, by the way. I mean, I'm pretty sure that...
Well, I mean, there's got to be some new content if they're going to do that.
That's true.
Would it be enough to relive the experience? I don't know.
I only played halfway through Bully, by the way. Still have, you know, so...
Oh, that's it. We're revoking your gamer card.
Why?
Because...
I just got to that one mission that just annoys the hell... I forgot what it is, but at that point, I just threw up my hands and quit, so...
Oh, I can't... The game can't help it if you suck.
Not a matter of suck. How about you, Jordan? What do you think?
I'm excited to see properties come back when they're well loved. I never played Bully, so I don't really have any skin in the game, so to speak. But
here's the thing, Jordan. Picture Grand Theft Auto, except you have to go to class.
Oh my God, it's so much fun!
I mean, when you go to class, you actually go to class. If you go to biology class, you have to dissect something. If you go to math class, you have to do math problems, that sort of thing.
Right. And the great part, one of the great parts about it for me was that the school year progressed and you had no control over that. So it was just like, oh, shit, you didn't finish that class and now it's Christmas.
Yeah, well, the fact that Jimmy could get an achievement for kissing all the boys. Ride the Rainbow?
I'm glad to have left school behind me. I see no need to relive it.
Well, in this one, you were the bully as opposed to the bullied.
I don't know about that, Paul. I think Jimmy gets bullied a lot in this game. I mean,
he gives it out as good as he gets.
Yeah, and he has the option of fighting back, but you can play a straight student who doesn't do that, who doesn't, you know, attack other kids, you know.
For those of us who were told it was wrong to hit, it was a cathartic experience.
But here's the thing is that if you do act like a bully, you get punished accordingly. You know, it's not like...
Only if they catch you?
No, that's just it. If they catch you, I mean... But, you know...
I will just say this as a former teacher. You know those nightmares that everybody used to have that, you know, they're a class that you forgot you signed up for or, you know, all of that stuff? As a teacher, you start getting these nightmares about being asked to teach a class for which you've had no preparation. Oh, no, wait. That actually happens all the time.
But, you know, the thing is that Rockstar has been teasing for the past few years Bully 2.
Right.
So that makes me think this could be a proper sequel.
It does take several years for a AAA title to hit the market.
Yeah, but BioWare's also been teasing Jade Empire for the past few years, too, and I'm tired of it.
I don't know. We could be seeing, if they're patenting names, you know, we could be seeing something as early as next holiday.
I'm willing to bet you it's a next gen version of Bully. But you know what? That's not a bad thing. I mean.
But even a next gen version of Bully would be pumping money into the studio that owns the property.
after the Grand Theft Auto 5 launch, I think they're swimming in cash. They can pretty much make whatever they want at this point.
Well, yeah, but that would be more likely earmarked back towards the Grand Theft Auto team.
But
yeah, that's true.
But
and covering overhead in other places aside from Bully.
I wonder what at what point major publishers are going to start kickstarting. Because, you know, Chris Roberts has raised $30 million for Star Citizen now. And they're going for $32 million stretch goal.
I don't think they need to do a Kickstarter. I mean, you know, if they wanted to, EA could put it up to a vote on Origin. What of our old properties do you want to see next?
Well, no, I think I'm pretty sure they could do some sort of crowdfunding, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be Kickstarter. It just could be, hey, listen, if you want this game, help publish it. You know, help us publish it.
I would be more than willing to kick in money for a new version of Ultima.
Well, guess what? There's Shroud of the Avatar being developed by Lord British himself. And I donated to that Kickstarter. Thank you very much.
Lord British died. Sorry.
I killed him with a cannonball.
It was an accident.
Well, okay.
Died or was killed.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Twitch cracks down on PlayStation 4 Playroom inappropriate content, and this comes to us from Escapist Magazine. Twitch banned a channel that a couple used to stream video of themselves drinking and undressing in the PS4 game The Playroom. Launching with the PS4 was the ability to host live streams and easily share live footage of a video game with others. Twitch, one of the live streaming platforms, is moderating user feeds with a live from PlayStation 4 integration and has restarted its strict user policy. Okay, and has restated its strict user policy, stating that, quote-unquote, non-gaming content will not be allowed. Some PlayStation 4 users have used Twitch in conjunction with the PS4 game Playroom, which uses the DualShock 4 controller and the PlayStation camera to create an augmented reality experience. Twitch banned one channel for streaming content from the Playroom in which a couple allegedly drank to unconsciousness. Later in the stream, the man lifted the woman's shirt. After a brief blackout, the broadcast resumed and the woman was naked. Sorry? This is disturbing, but still funny. A Twitch spokesperson issued the fucks. I'm just thinking of the perverted, you know, just to break this article. What did they expect? Just wondering.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I could always.
We're going to let you use a camera to put up videos. Come on.
Yeah, I could always
repeat what wrong.
The Twitch spokesperson said, but it's whatever. It's just about violating TOS and all that crap. Now, there was a lot of confusion about this. They thought that Sony had banned or Sony announced that there would no longer be Twitch on or whatever. It's just, you know, when
it's just you can't put porn, even if you're starring in it.
Porn and there was another channel that was blocked because one of the people in the living room rolled out a giant glass bong and started smoking on camera. Yeah, that channel was banned immediately afterwards. So,
but you see, what kind of and coming from the source, I mean, you could see what kind of an insult this is about to become. But what kind of attention-seeking, selfless whore, really, is gonna do that? Like, whip out a bong and smoke on a channel where anybody and their mother can come watch? Like, really, what has to be wrong with you?
Well, for one thing, you have to actually subscribe to that channel. It's not like anybody's going to go there because first you have to find out where it is. You have to know the person. So it's not
actually
that,
you don't.
You know.
Actually, you don't. The way it works on the PlayStation 4 is that you can go to your streaming section.
Okay.
And it shows you a little thumbnail of everything that's currently streaming. And you can choose which channel you want to watch.
But that begs the question, why not have private channels?
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you can choose in your streaming options to share only with friends if you want to do that.
But you see, now there was this claim by this guy who said that Microsoft banned him from Skype for cursing, which is absolutely nonsense because
how does Microsoft control Skype?
I'm willing to bet. He said that the thing is that the error was that said that Xbox Live, you need Xbox Live to in order to use Skype. So it tells me that he was being naughty on other stuff and got banned from Xbox Live, therefore he can't use Skype. You know, that's my impression of what's going on there.
Shouldn't have called that kid a f- just banging.
But
Jonah did get a technical foul in his basketball game.
Yeah, the thing is that it's kind of.
I have
clever,
no idea how those two things would be related.
Here's the thing: is that when I'm playing NBA 2K14, I sometimes have to watch my language because if I scream out. In frustration or that was bullshit, all of a sudden the game will say, technical foul, bad language, and the other team will take a technical. That is what happens on real NBA courts. So while it's sort of like I'm feeling like I'm being censored, I say, oh, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be a basketball player, and this could actually happen to me if I do that, if I yell at the referee for that. So, and it doesn't do it every time I curse, only when something, when the referee calls something or anything like that, you know, or something. So it's sort of like, okay, I got to watch my language and all that stuff, because it does a lot of other immersive stuff, you know, that's sort of meta. So I just find it really, really weird. You know, I just, you know, it's one of those things in which, okay, thank you. By the way,
I find it hilarious that, you know, nobody at Twitch or Sony apparently thought of this, even though, you know, back in 2006 or whenever the Kinect first came out, it was one of the first things that, not the Kinect,
maybe
even before that.
There with the reign of penises, yes.
The Xbox Live camera, which Gabe and Tycho were making fun of on Penny Arcade, saying, you know, all of a sudden your inbox is going to be filled with pictures of people's dicks. You know, it shouldn't have surprised anyone that this was going to happen.
But it didn't happen with me. I didn't get any of those things. And I played Uno with the camera, and none of that happened ever. So, I mean...
You're the one. Okay.
I'm just saying, you know, you can just avoid people whose gamer tags say underground on them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, but the thing about Kinect, by the way, is that it recognizes you. And if, you know... So every time I turn on my Xbox One, it'll say, oh, hi, Jonah, because it recognizes me. If you use the Kinect, it actually recognizes your face and everything like that.
Yeah, that's not at all creepy.
No, that's what I was telling Jordan the other day, was like, I have this wonder if it's going to be like Demon Seed all of a sudden. It's like, oh, hello, Jonah, you're looking absolutely fabulous today. No, don't walk away. I want you to stay right there while I look at you.
What are you doing, Dave?
No, have you ever seen
Demon? I've seen pictures where people's pets have been recognized as a guest player.
Paul, have you seen Demon Seed?
I don't understand what you're talking about, Dave. Please rephrase.
Have you seen Demon Seed?
No.
It's about this computer.
Come on, I was making a 2001 reference.
We all got it.
I got that reference.
But, no, the children at home didn't get it.
But the thing is that Demon Seed is a more apt thing. As a matter of fact, The Simpsons Halloween episode once made fun of it with a computer with Pierce Brosnan's voice and Marge. Anyway,
oh, yes.
In other words, okay. A computer that runs a household starts getting horny over a woman and impregnates her with a cybernetic baby. So anyway.
Ew.
Yeah, bro. That's exact. It's a horror movie. Watch Demon Seed. It's a classic movie.
With a name like Demon Seed, it should have something to do with, oh, I don't know, demons.
Well, it is a seed from a demonic computer.
So is it actually possessed by a demon? Because otherwise the title makes no sense.
She's impregnated by a demonic computer.
Is it literally...
Literally a demonic computer, yes. Yes.
All right,
there's like a pentagram inscribed on the motherboard and...
You got to see it. It's campy 70s schlock, but it's also pretty effective.
Blizzard dev apologizes for remarks on sexualized designs. This comes to us from Polygon. Heroes of the Storm game director Dustin Browder has issued an apology for comments he made in a press interview during which he appeared to dismiss concerns about hyper-sexualized designs of female game characters. Quote, in recent interview with Rock Paper Shotgun, I responded poorly to a statement the interviewer made about over-sexualized character designs in games, he wrote on the Heroes of the Storm blog. I want to apologize for that. This is a serious topic, and I don't want anyone to think I or anyone else at Blizzard is insensitive about how we portray our characters. Heroes of the Storm is a multiplayer online battle arena MOBA game based on characters from developer Blizzard's roster of games, including World of Warcraft, Diablo, and StarCraft.
By the way, before you move on, it's basically what happened to Blizzard's version of Defense of the Ancients, Dota, because they couldn't have two Dotas. So Valve got Dota, and Blizzard got turn their Dota into this.
Gotcha. During an interview with Rock Paper Shotgun published last week, Browder responded to a question on female character design by saying that, quote, we're not sending a message to anybody. We're just making characters who look cool. He added that some of the characters were already sexualized before they appeared in Heroes of the Storm. I mean, Kerrigan is wearing heels, right? When pressed on the matter, he added that, quote, "We're not running for president. We're not sending a message. No one should look to our game for that." In a statement today, Browder said that he wanted to ensure that players are not alienated by hypersexualized designs. "We have an amazing roster of heroes, and we will always strive to make sure that everyone can have a hero that they identify with and feel powerful using. At the end of the day, we all want the same thing, a great game where we can all have fun battling for glory and maybe some bragging rights."
This reminds—
see, I don't mind hypersexualized female avatars as long as there are hypersexualized males to go along with them.
Well, that's true. Well, I was exactly. about to say, you know, what's it called? How about a taut pair of male ass and a beauty?
You have Ivy running around in apparently a leather belt and not much
that,
else.
It isn't that Ivy is what she's wearing. It's just that she has breasts she's not the size of watermelons.
And breasts roughly 1.5 times the size of her head. But at the same time, you have Voldo running around in S&M gear and his ass cheeks hanging out. So,
well, you know what about
it does cut both ways.
I forgot that PSP game. PSP, I don't know if it's a fighting game, but remember it had the sorceress. Who was just
Dragon's Crown? Yeah.
I mean, it's just mental. But then you look at the other characters, like the other female character in it was an Amazon, and she was basically two tree trunks, and you know, and sort of like you know. So it depends on what the exaggerations are, right?
Yes, and that game also had a tiny little elf character who was perfectly fine. On the male side, they had this dwarf that was you know basically shaped like an upside down triangle. It was amazing. I don't know what they were thinking with that design.
But I think he's, you know, when he says, "We're not running for president, we're just sending a message, no one should look to our game for that," he's basically right. I mean, this is just a game, you know?
And it is a video game, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only part of this that resonates, though, is the fact that the average gamer is a lonely, single guy who gets his rocks off on these images. I mean, that's...
I'm not even going to comment other than the fact to say that you're wrong.
Well, it's true. I mean, for this kind of game?
World of Warcraft has a fairly large female player base. Well, I don't know what the percentages of it is. I don't think Blizzard can afford to offend its female player base.
No company can afford to offend its female player base.
Well, I remember they had this documentary, and I remember Capcom having to deal with some virulently misogynistic competitive Street Fighter player who just basically browbeat this female competitor to tears. What's it called? And they had to kick him out forever. I mean, it's just, you know, so they're trying to get rid of that element.
Good. It is National Violence Against Women Day. An anti-violence against women day.
Yeah, I was about to say, what?
There's violence against women awareness day. That's what it is.
That would be that
anti-violence. You know what I mean? It's the things have not gotten better day for women in violence area.
Yeah.
If there was a thing on Google,
I believe you.
Judging me.
We're not.
I believe you.
Anyways,
I had to look it up. It's the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
It's a thing.
Sony
to make $250 million dollars in entertainment cuts. Nothing is too sacred. And this comes from Games Industry Biz. Ahem. Sony, which just launched its next generation console, the PlayStation 4, is looking to make $250 million worth of cuts to its entertainment business. It seems there is a little bit It seems there is a little bit of a schism between the executives as company CEO Katz Harari and entertainment division CEO Michael Leinton, who have differing ideas of what it is. Of what is slashable. Hari stated that stop moving the cursor around. Hari stated that according to Bloomberg News, quote, "I know what the whole of Sony is greater than the sum of its parts." Pointing at the PlayStation 4 and Blu-ray, he added, quote, "Sony Entertainment is a core part of Sony and is crucial for our future growth." Linton, however, ominously stated that, quote, no cost is too sacred to cut. Sony is looking to cut $150 million of overhead and $100 million of procurement savings. The PS4 launched on November 14th.
Yeah. So, I mean, this would probably be the time that Sony would be making cuts because, like I said, the contractors are probably finished their work on the PS4 and they're just going to let them go. And the thing is that, you know, I reported this, I told this to Jordan a couple of days ago, that while the PlayStation 4 sells at $500, I mean $400 for $399, it costs $382 to make. And even that slim margin, you know, you have to deal with R&D and advertising and all that other stuff, you know. So it's interesting to see what Sony, because their TVs haven't been selling, you know. Their electronics.
Right. They invested heavy in 3D TV and it didn't really go anywhere.
And the PS4 they were selling at a loss for a very long time. So
PS3 was selling at a loss for a very long time.
So I mean, you know,
didn't the PS4 just launch?
Just launched. It sold 1 million, and GameStop says they still have 2.5 million to make. But,
yeah, they're still selling them as fast as they can get them out the door. So,
So the question is, you know, but here's the thing is that, you know, that's all well and good, but is it just going to have Sony just treading water? Is that what's going to happen here?
Well, I find it interesting that they've added on $100 million since last week when we discussed this. Last week it was $150 million in cuts. Now it's $250.
The story might have been skewed about where it was trying to cut.
Well, what is added is this extra $100 million of procurement savings, which I'm not quite sure what that means. But
they're not buying new stuff?
$150 million in overhead. They promised that the gaming division is going to be exempt from this, but this article makes it sound like that's not the case.
I mean,
they could end up cutting the Vita or whatever they're going to end up doing.
Does this remind you a little bit of a year ago with Microsoft when Don Matrick said one thing and Jim Spencer said something else, you know, that was completely different?
It actually reminds me more of the end of the Dreamcast, where Sega was hemorrhaging money and the only way they could control it was stopping the sale of the console.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, all I know is that I saw the 4K TV at Pepcom and it was fantastic. I mean, it was like looking at a photograph, right? But no one's going to buy the thing because it's way too expensive, you know.
$16,000 for a TV is a little out of line.
And the thing is that the 8K is right around the corner, so it's going to be like eight track tapes, you know, in which it's just going to be there for a little bit of time and then it's going to vanish. The Vita's not selling; it's still not selling. And I'm trying to figure out. And you said that there are other business that's that's making money is their insurance business in Japan.
Right. Yeah. Historically, Sony's insurance business has been huge. So that will probably be safe. In their entertainment, I think a lot of their television stuff is going to go away simply because the television market has been drying up and dying. I don't know if you saw that article. It's really not part of the podcast, but television as a whole is dying, whether you're in good shape or bad shape. So, I could see them putting that out to pasture.
But, you know, How's Sony's movie division hasn't been hot either.
No, Sony's movie division is.
Yeah. I can't think of the last hot Sony movie I saw.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you have, without knowing it. I mean, the thing is that movies in general, you know, most of their money is in video right now anyway. So, I mean.
And they had a couple of very high profile flops in their film division. Yeah.
Sony Pictures is stuff like Carrie, The Evil Dead, Identity Prize, After Earth, White House Down, Grown Ups 2, The Smurfs 2, you know, Elysium. Yeah, that's a string of flops.
I haven't
one after
seen any
another.
Of those films.
Elysium was good. I liked Elysium.
Yeah, but it was a major flop.
Yeah.
I mean, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. I mean,
that looked funny. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen the first one. I mean,
see, that's the thing, is that I needed to watch the first one first.
But I mean, when you have movies like After Earth and Grown Ups 2, you know, maybe this is all karma for Sony constantly putting out Adam Sandler movies. It has to be.
You know, the new Amazing Spider-Man movie looks like it has potential. We won't know until the trailer comes out next month, but I'm looking forward to the new Spider-Man movie.
Isn't Spider-Man going to be part of the Avengers too?
No, it's a Sony property.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying.
To Sony, so as long as they make a new Spider-Man movie every, I think it's like 3 years, they can keep the rights. Mm, and correct. Then the same thing with Universal Studios and the Marvel Heroes, as far as theme parks attractions it goes. That contract will end in, like, I think it's 2017 or something. So,
X-Men and Fantastic Four belong to Fox.
Right, and then exclusive console video game rights are handled through Activision. Like, there's a whole lot of little pieces of that which won't be cleared up for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
The worst part of it is that they're adding Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch to the next Avengers film, but they can't use the word mutants and they can't talk about the relationship to Magneto. Because that's all owned by Fox.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly they might just not explain it at all and just go with it. Which could be entertaining.
Let me ask you a question. Did you get excited over the post-credit sequence in the Wolverine?
The post-credit sequence for Days of Future Past. Yeah, at the end of it, they had the bit for leading the Days of Future Past. I was very excited for that.
No. That wasn't it Wolverine in an airport and Magneto shows up and then Professor X shows up?
Yes, it's leading into X-Men Days of Future Past, yes.
And, and listen, you know, you have to watch the Red Letter Media review of the Wolverine because the way they discuss that scene. It's just hilarious, you know. It's like,
no, it was as somebody who bought that original storyline for 60 cents a comic off the newsstand as it came out. I'm very excited to see Days of Future Past.
I wasn't a Marvel reader. I was always DC anyway. So
I didn't even realize it was the Days of Future Past until recently when somebody mentioned. Somebody pointed out that was like the whole Cable Future thing on the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah.
The problem is that, you know, they shouldn't call it X-Men. You know, they should just continue to calling it Wolverine. Because,
oh my God,
they are doing a third Wolverine movie.
I know. I'm just saying, they should name the next X-Men movie Wolverine as well. Because it's all about Wolverine.
Wolverine is the least interesting part of the X-Men franchise.
Well, the thing is that Wolverine is supposed to be the deadpan snob.
Wolverine getting fired?
No.
There's a YouTube video of Wolverine getting fired that's worth taking a look at. There's also Gambit getting fired.
Okay. Anyways, we're gonna move on to listener feedback. Paul, why don't you take it since you've been away so long?
Listener feedback. This comes to us from Alpha Shard. That's a new name. I'm so glad I finished Jade Empire before this episode. I have to say, I did see it coming in the cutscene just after you defeat the Emperor. He got the gem and was just walking down the steps, and I thought, oh man, he's evil. Damn it. Exclamation point. If PS3 programming isn't so different from PS4, then why can't we have backwards compatibility? Oh, the answer is because that's the feature you have to pay extra for. moving on. I'm thinking of getting a Wii U mostly as a family console for us to play on. I don't know what Nintendo's strategy is anymore. If they're giving up on main console and just going to go 3DS.
By the way, Paul, have you seen any Wii U advertising on the streets?
Constantly.
Really?
Yes, constantly.
Where?
On television.
Really?
Yes.
I haven't seen any Wii U advertising.
Well, that's because you're lame.
No, but the thing is that last week they talked about a poll, you know, and they found that only 1% of the populace is going to be getting a Wii U on Black Friday. We're interested.
Well, yeah, because it's been out for a year, and because it's readily available everywhere, and because everybody's trying to get ahead and get a sale and get their Christmas shopping out of the way, compete with consoles that have been out for literally a week.
But they're more available than those consoles that have been out for, quote unquote, literally a week.
It wasn't, right. It wasn't just.
Bow games and a few others on four discs with a soundtrack included for about $20.
Okay, so the question of the week, by the way, was what was the best bundle or game that you bought on sale or digital thing?
Okay.
So that so the Ultimate Collection. I remember seeing that. I should have gotten it when it was out.
I also got a Neo Geo with about 10 games for $20 from a pawn shop, but that system and games we got sucked. So we used it as a CD player. After
Hold
that.
On. You know what? Mr. Do Neo is still holds up. I'm sorry. I love Mr. Do Neo, but I played on an emulator, so I didn't have to pay for it.
Question of the week, music score. It's hard for me to pick a perfect or favorite video game soundtrack / score. Well, that's because you have no taste. The music aspect of games is really half the experience of if you're zoning out while playing. I think then that I would lessen the enjoyment of said game. I love JRPG scores like Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy, and Suikoden. Suikoden. The emotional attachment that I feel with many of the scores in those games made it that much more a memorable experience to me.
By the way, Jordan, you know that they announced Persona 5.
I saw they announced Persona 5 PS3.
Yeah, does that make you want to run away?
No, I mean, I couldn't play Persona 4 because the music annoyed me. But, you know, it I don't even hear it is the thing. And because I'm not a music guy, so most of the music just kind of washes over me and it's in one ear and out the other. And it doesn't even register, but certain things drive my wife crazy. And in Assassin's Creed 4, the pirates on your ship have sea shanties that they sing and you can collect sea shanties in every port city and give your ship new things to sing. And there's certain songs that she's like, oh my God, they can't sing. They're pirates. What do you expect? They're not musically trained.
Anyway, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at thegamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our game news at gamesnews.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and iTunes comments. And look for Paul's new game, Team USA's Pinsanity, now on Facebook.
Woohoo, Pinsanity!
I'm gonna have to look that up right now.
So, Paul, before we go,
yeah.
Your favorite music score.
Oh, does anything really beat The Legend of Zelda?
So, I mean, yeah, seriously. But I mean, which one?
Oh, well, but then again, there is also Final Fantasy X-2. I know. But those are still awesomely singable songs. Okay. And really, they reused a lot of the music from the original. Final Fantasy X-1. As opposed to Final Fantasy X-2, not Final Fantasy 1, which is also a great soundtrack. Damn, what a hard question.
Well, you don't have to say your favorite. You could just say off the top of your back. Now, when you say The Legend of Zelda, do you mean the original? You know, the 8-bit chiptune?
You know what? I really do think that I love the Link to the Past one. Because there are so many incidental musics. But then again, how did the do 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 boom.
You know, it's really. Have you ever gone to the video games play concerts? You know, the video game concerts. I forgot.
No. Oh, but I also have a really wicked remix of the Tetris song, okay. with the rapping dolphins in it.
Yeah, Jordan was going on last week about the score to Tetris. Yeah.
Yes.
But
which, by the way, was not created for Tetris. I'm just going to point that out, being the resident Ukrainian on the show.
Yes.
Mm. Well, the thing is that, you know, I think I'll stick with Mule and Mass Effect 2. That's what I think I'll stick with.
I kind of like the version of the Tetris song that where they put lyrics to it. It was I am the man who's arranging the blocks which continue to fall from
a literal lyrics version of it.
I am the man who is arranging the blocks for the fall from up above the sky.
I'm reminded of Bill Murray singing the theme to Star Wars. You know, Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Anyway.
From Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so anyways, feel free to welcome Paul back in the mailbag, and we will see you next week.
Paul, are you coming back next week, or is this a one-time deal? Or what's the deal? Are you back, or just back?
I don't know. I haven't decided. It depends on how long the show usually runs for now.
Depends on how the fans say, we want him back.
I don't. You know what? I was told that my impending return was announced to our listening public, and I received neither love nor hate in our listener feedback. I'm bothered. I may not return.
No, but Jordan went on about it.
I went on about it. I'm willing to work my schedule around yours. So whatever day works for you, just let me know. I am currently working from home in bed with my foot in a giant fiberglass cast. So I'm not going.
What happened?
Well, before we go into that, you know, you can discuss this after. But you know, the thing is that I'm willing to bet that maybe the fans didn't really think you were coming back until you actually came back. So like, they didn't want to be burned.
I'm very disappointed at Hans Krebs, frankly.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Hans in a very long time.
Buddy, a lot of people in a while.
And my buddy, Max Donovan.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I think, you know, without Paul, you know, people haven't bothered to write. I mean, we still get the downloads, but we don't get the responses as much. So maybe Paul will increase responses.
Oh, look, I'm good for ratings.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I knew.
I knew. We all knew, Paul.